seriously want.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa?
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
So much sadness from me. That's the way I feel. All the madness from me. That's what makes you real. I don't want your pain.
Oh, you like that, don't you?
I can relate to this.
Pain.
Pain.
By a band called Stereo Mud. No longer together, but I'm rallying to get them back for a reunion show.
Oh. Excellent.
My husband was in the band.
Excellent. Do me a favor, Brian Mongalucci, you hipster millennial that I hate, I loathe, I despise, with your Converse sneakers, your skinny jeans, and male bun. Send me this song on a link.
Look at that.
Good. This is good.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
No. Now, Juliet Huddy, who joins us, so nice. She's now done it twice, 2 days in a row.
Thank you so much for having me. Yesterday, Thursday, and Friday.
The reason I want him to send that to me is because...
That's your theme song.
Yeah, but I am considered the master of the segue into live reads.
Yes.
And because the theme of that song, which was so well done, is pain, pain, pain.
I don't want your pain. I'm singing to you. I don't want your pain.
Yeah, well,
I don't want all your aspirin bottles.
Right, you don't want my colitis, my ileitis, my Crohn's disease.
I definitely don't want that, no.
In which I'm popping hillbilly heroin, oxycodone to deal with that. You don't want that kind of pain, right?
I don't want your pain.
But.
Pain.
But. There are a number of remedies that I've sought for pain relief here at WABC, I've spoken of many times. Dr. Singer at the Stem Cell Center on Park Avenue, he took care of my shredded rotator cuff with my own stem cells. I'm pain-free there.
How does that work, by the way? I'm curious.
He takes
a shot?
Dr. Singer takes your own stem cells. He took them out of my back area.
Yeah.
And then, naturally, he's got to clean it up, you know, and use centrifugal force on him. But it's your stem cells to be used wherever you're having pain.
And they're shot, and then they are supposed to regenerate something.
Well, it's either you take an injection or an IV into the affected area. And it was magnificent for me because I had had, like, rotator cuff pain for close to 10 years.
Not only were you shot, you've got rotator cuff. I mean, it's amazing that you actually show up to work.
And then recently I've been going to our sponsor, Pain Physicians New York, Dr. Tamer Elbaz, because I have arthritis in the neck from having been battered around in the neck so many times. And he's doing a magnificent job there. And then, as you know, I have sciatica.
Oh, my.
Especially when I see my kids on the weekends, my youngest kids, Carter and Hunter.
They activate it?
Well, no. What they do is they jump on my shoulders like I'm a jungle gym.
Maybe they should refrain from that. Yeah. I would suggest that's probably.
They start pounding me.
Find the jungle gym.
I feel like I'm.
Maybe they just don't like you.
I feel like I'm Gorilla Monsoon in a WWF old match. And these are two Lilliputians who are trying to take me down. And they're pounding away, and sometimes that triggers my sciatica. So the zero compression back brace, that keeps me whole from having the sciatica kick in, which is really painful.
You have just nailed so many of your sponsors in one fell swoop, and it's all because of Stereo Med's song Pain.
But I will tell you this. When I saw you walk into the studio yesterday,
you felt a larger degree of pain than any of those things ever make you feel.
I was having flashback of pain all those mornings for 3 years. Maybe more.
It was 4 years.
4 years. At Good Day Early Call, New York, Channel 5.
Is that what the name of it was?
Yeah, Good Day Early
I thought it was Wake
Call.
Up. I could never get it straight, and I was the host of this show.
What, are you in a drug-induced psychosis during that time?
Man, you never know.
I mean, there was the logo. There was the announcements. Good Day Early Call, New York,
I was busy juggling things like you walking in, being half in the bag, and Ben you know, spouting off about some brilliant thing that he knows about that I don't.
And also, you had to get all dolled up. You see, I just came in. I look like like I had just come from a flop house.
Fakakta.
Right, right. Whereas naturally.
What does that mean?
Fakakta. That means, you know, you're half in, you're half out.
There you go. That's you.
Yeah, yeah. Verklempt. Verklempt might be better, right? So anyway, the point being is, I would come in, and it didn't matter how I looked. But you had to be like, you know, all dolled up, glamour girl. And naturally, whatever guy that they had partnered you with on the stage there of Channel 5, you know, you're both looking into the mirror simultaneously.
That was,
you're spritzing.
First of all, stop. Because that was not the case. Ben nor I ever sat there and just stared at ourselves. The only time Ben was looking in the mirror, which he did a few times, was because he was trying to straighten his tie, which is distracting to the audience.
Come on, you know that if you're a host or a hostess on TV, part of the reason you're there is because you're a pretty boy or pretty girl.
That's not true.
I mean, look at Chris Cuomo. The guy cannot chew gum and think at the same time.
Oh, my.
Why do you think he anchors the morning show at CNN?
Because he's a Mensa candidate?
You think because he's a Mensa candidate?
Well, so you're saying you can be stupid, but as long as you're good looking?
Oh, my God. Do you realize the number of stupid people that I have seen read the teleprompter?
Today I was actually, I shouldn't say
no,
that.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
No,
ahead.
I can't.
Get yourself into trouble. Come on, let me lure you
in. I was watching a show.
Yes.
I'm not going to say which one it was, but yeah. I was amazed at the vapidness of one
you shouldn't be.
Person.
You shouldn't be.
It's been a long time since I've seen it bad.
You know how you know that? Because I've done it enough times on the stage with the host or the hostess. When the teleprompter goes down, that's when you can tell if the host or the hostess is good.
Oh, amen, brother. That's why working at Fox News for all those years was such good training, because I did Fox and Friends. And
yes.
You have a few little things in the prompter, but mostly it's just riffing kind of like this. And it definitely trains you.
It's like when President Barack Obama would be reading from the teleprompter and there would be a glitch. Remember how there would be that pause?
Oh, there's
that
nothing
endless
worse than
delay.
That, though. Oh, there's nothing worse.
And now he's generally pretty good. He was good at improv, but he would like be frozen like a deer staring into the headlights.
No, but think about it, though. When you're doing something like that, typically you're saying things that if you screw up facts or names, you are going to get brutalized.
Look at
Donald Trump. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, when the prompter goes out, you know, and you're the president, you really probably should be freaking out, because no doubt the next page is going to be something that you're going to be ripped for if it's not
the other thing,
perfectly accurate.
The other thing that both the host or the hostesses of these shows are divas. They're male divas and female divas, and you were the biggest diva of all.
How was that?
Because you would not use mass transit. You refused. We'd be talking about a story of the number 6 train on the Upper East Side, and you'd be talking, Yechala, I'll never go into the subway.
Yechala?
Yechala. Isn't that true?
It is actually, and I have no problem admitting it. I will say, I've broken ground.
You've broken ground.
I've been riding the train.
You've broken your virginity and riding mass transit?
That is horrific, and I hope that, no. First of all, that should have happened years ago. But anyway, I'm riding LIRR, the LIRR.
Oh, my God. You're riding?
And I find it quite pleasant, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, but you're not riding during the rush hours, right?
No, I was riding. I mean, if I was at peak. It was the 8, you know, 45.
So you had some guy with Brill Cream in his hair falling asleep on your shoulder there.
No, what I had was, I'll tell you what I had. So if you're watching the streaming, I'm wearing like a T-shirt and jeans and Converse sneakers, which you love so much. And I walk around with like
Glamour Girl, I hate to bust your bubble. There is no video streaming.
Well, whatever.
You see, you're so used to TV.
I don't know. Well, then I'll send a picture. But so I have a notebook that I take notes in, and it's like one of those trapper keeper kind of things that you had when you were in, you know, third grade.
Is it your diary?
So no, I just was taking notes, and I'm sitting there, and I had my earplugs in, but I wasn't listening to anything because I can't do two things at once. I have to just focus.
So you are typical of a host or a hostess in TV.
Brainless,
you cannot chew gum and think at the same time. You cannot
pretty
do
much.
Two things. You cannot multitask.
I can't listen to Bernie and Sid talking whilst I'm trying to take notes, reading something. And that's fine. I'm right brain. I'm creative. And I can't add and I can't do other things like that. I'm not
thank
linear.
You for admitting
but
that.
Anyway, so I'm sitting there with my headphones in, and this couple, I don't know if they're a couple, but it was a man and woman. They were facing each other. We were in the seats where you face each other. And they assumed apparently that I had my headphones blaring because I tap my feet when I'm sitting.
Oh.
And especially after I have a lot of coffee.
Sort of like a horse.
So they start talking.
In the stall,
yeah,
the bar.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. They start talking about me and they're looking at me and the woman says something and I heard her. She said something about, isn't she a little old to be going to high school? And they were mocking me. And then the husband or the man starts saying, she's the, I don't know. The woman's like, how old do you think she is? And the guy's like, I don't know. She's kind of being like 40. And I was just like holding myself back from taking my earphones out and letting them know that their insults were actually.
Actually, it's not an insult.
No, I mean.
That's a compliment.
No, it wasn't.
Of course. They
Isn't
thought
she
you were going
too
to high school.
No, they were like, okay, why is she dressed like that? Clearly, they were saying she's inappropriately,
You're inappropriately dressed. You walked into this studio here. You look like a vixen, a viper, a Venus flytrap.
Oh, really?
Here. Yeah.
How is that? Vixens wear ripped jeans and maybe I shouldn't be saying
jeans.
That I show up to
you're
work like that.
You're showing a shot of leg. Half of your leg is sticking
leg?
Out of your
wait,
jeans.
Wait, what are you talking about?
Seriously.
These are not the jeans with the massive gaping holes in them. They're, you can't even see through. There's no skin. You can't see. It's just it's like a fake rip.
There's plenty of skin there. And by
there's
the
no
way,
skin. It's on my ankles when you're not like, you know,
by the way,
Mennonite.
You're just a few steps away from walking the stroll over on 11th Avenue at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Sailor,
do you need a date?
I've never seen anybody on 11th Avenue at that time wearing ripped jeans, Converse sneakers, and a striped T-shirt.
Trust me, you got that look. You got that look. I'm telling you,
that filthy tart look.
The Sailor Boys will be flocking all around you. Let me open up our phone lines
That's
on this.
That's a compliment.
1-800-848-WABC, a major momentous occasion. Diva girl who would never take mass transit has now decided to slum with the rest of us and take the Long Island Railroad.
But I would still never take a subway. It's not going to happen, ever. Rats running around. It's
so
hot
you're like
in
Comrade
the summer.
Bill de Blasio. You're like the mayor.
Don't ever compare me to him, please. I beg of you.
Yeah, but
that is
take
the biggest insult you can possibly.
I understand, but he like you. And by the way, I have to compare
it. He won't, because he doesn't fit on the subway, and because he wakes up too late.
I have to compare you because you're a Baltimore Orioles fan.
Yes, but I will cheer for the Yankees. Unlike your mayor, Bill de Blasio, Comrade Bill de Blasio.
Well, he's a solid Red Sox fan. He
which
refuses
is fine.
To
that's
cheer
fine.
For the Yankees. Won't go to Yankee Stadium.
That is asinine, and it's ridiculous, and he's a doofus.
Well, let's open up our phone lines out there. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222 to the phones. We go first up in the queue is Rob calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Bobby.
Hi, Rob.
Let's see. Hey, Julia, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you? Curtis says hello, too.
Good, good. Thank you. Since it's Friday, I want to ask Julia a question that's more or less on the light side.
Yes.
Yesterday, listening, I discovered that you like metal music.
I do.
Okay, so that being said, Judas Priest, do you like them?
I saw Judas Priest. Prudential?
If you do, what's your favorite song of Priest?
Oh, God. I don't know the names of the songs. I just know I know a few of the songs. They weren't like a big favorite of mine, but I do like Rob Halford. I think he's a great performer.
He's the best.
Yeah, I saw them at Prudential Center a couple of years ago. I think it was in Jersey somewhere. Yeah, it was Newark.
So you like devil worship music?
No, God.
Is that correct?
That's ridiculous. That's another fallacy.
Rob, it is devil worship music,
Rob,
isn't it?
No, it's not.
Rob, don't you find that most...
I'm going to play a tune that I've listened to often because I have dedicated my life in opposition to this.
Breaking the law.
This always reminds me of Beavis and Butthead.
Breaking the law. Really?
Breaking the law.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Very good. Very good recall.
But you're into this. This is like, this should be your theme song,
I love
Breaking
Judas
the Law.
Priest. I love Breaking the Law. That's
yeah.
right.
You like breaking laws. You like going over to
I've gone to jail like 77 times. I've gotten locked up, so you're right. But I've also dedicated my life to locking up those who break the law on a regular basis.
Well, I would think 77 times would be breaking the law on a regular basis, but that's just me.
77
sounds like me with my
AM
parking
WABC. You see, it's so appropriate. 1-800-848-WABC. When we come back, we got to get into this thing. I actually side with Mayor de Blasio on this. Because when you're a fan of a team, You can't be a fair weather fan like you, Juliet.
It's not. It's just not fair. You're using your logic is flawed.
Oh no. He's absolutely correct. He's a Red Sox fan. He cannot ever root for the Yankees, as I could never root for the Red Sox or for the Mets.
It's childish.
1-800.
Childish and churlish.
848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77-WABC.
Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets.
Come on out and beat the Mets,
hey.
Degenerate Met fans. I hate the Mets.
Hey.
I hate the Met fans.
I love that stadium.
What are they doing right now, Met fans, huh?
They're probably at home.
No, you know what they're getting ready to do.
What?
Line up for the Bluebird special, you know, where they have to eat oatmeal because they have no teeth left in their mouth.
First of all, when was the last time you were over at MetLife?
No, I mean City Field.
I always screw those up. I know what I'm... You know,
I will not go.
Blonde.
I will not go.
You really will never go there.
No, but I got a great story to tell you about Comrade Bill de Blasio as a baseball fan. But before we get into my story about Comrade de Blasio, who is quite knowledgeable about baseball, I got to give him credit for that. He has said, as a tried and true Boston Red Sox fan, if the Yankees get into the World Series, of course they will be in against the Dodgers.
That's pretty exciting, actually.
He will not attend any of the games at Yankee Stadium. He confided that to our own Bob Brown yesterday.
If you didn't know already, Mayor de Blasio is a diehard Red Sox fan. We all know how this season worked out for them. I asked the mayor if the Yanks make it to the World Series, would he go to a game?
No. No.
Really, Mr. Mayor?
If you're a real baseball fan, you're a real baseball fan.
Oh,
your
God.
Allegiance
Come
is
on.
Forever. And has nothing to do with politics. But if and when they win, we will give them a great parade.
You're the mayor of the city. I think you can show up to a game, or maybe an inning of a game, or maybe just show up on the field and show that you're supportive.
No, I'll tell you why he's correct.
It's ridiculous. No, he's not.
If you're a tried and true fan.
I am a tried and true fan of the Orioles. That does not preclude me from being supportive of all my friends, people who pay taxes, people who help provide.
No, you should hate the Yankees.
No, that's ridiculous.
If you're a true fan.
I don't believe that.
I hate the Red Sox. I hate the Mets. And I say that on a regular basis.
If you became mayor of Boston... God help them.
Yeah, God help them. Well, first off, I'm not Irish. That can never happen.
You would still say, I refuse to show up to a stadium. I mean, it's really that
Fenway
big
Park?
Of a deal.
I would rather go to hell without an asbestos suit than sit in Fenway Park.
Well, you're bizarre, so it
and
doesn't
then
surprise me.
I have
me.
To listen to, the theme song of the Red Sox. I hate it over and over and over again. Sweet Caroline by that traitor from New York who has become iconic for the Boston
but
Red
that,
Sox.
Why is that his fault?
Because they culturally appropriated his song as
but
being...
But that's not his fault.
Yeah, but he loves it. Neil Diamond loves it. He loves to sit there in Fenway Park, and he exults in the standing ovations that he gets.
That's funny. That's...
Hate that. You know,
it's a great carry.
When the Mets played the Red Sox '86, and it put a smile on Ken Duffy's face in the World Series, I was like Switzerland. I was neutral because I hated them both equally.
I think it's a little drastic. By the way, I said something negative when I first started working for Fox 5 in the morning, negative about about this song and about Neil Diamond, and I literally almost got run out of town. So I'm shocked that you're dissing.
No,
this the man,
is true.
The myth, the legend.
As Ken Duffy will let you know, every chance I get to take a shot at the Red Sox or the Mets, I do that. Neil Diamond, Sweet Caroline, the whole nine yards. But let's go to the phones. It's Eric calling from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC.
Good morning.
Hi. So I have to preface the call by saying I'm a sad, depressed, bitter, angry Mets fan.
Mm. Okay, you're honest.
But conservatives are pretty hypocritical. You can't be pissed at Hillary Clinton for saying she's a Yankee fan when everyone knows she's a Cub fan, but get pissed at de Blasio for being honest about being a
right.
Fan.
Yes, good.
Right. Calling hypocrisy out.
I will not be
hypocrisy.
Pissed.
That's right. Hypocrisy.
Even baseball, they're hypocritical. It's unbelievable.
But Eric, as a Met fan, you probably remember last year, opening day, Citi Field, the mayor was there wearing a throwback number 6 jersey in honor not of a Met who wore number 6, but of Rico Petrocelli, the former Red Sox, who graduated from Lafayette High School in Brooklyn. And you know who was sitting right next to him on that opening day? My middle son, Carter.
Oh.
Who was just learning baseball from me.
Oh, looks and like you're about to.
He
are
was
you getting
there,
teary-eyed?
No. He was there in the company of his sweating. Mother, the Queensborough president, Melinda Katz. And I refused to go because I will not go to Citi Field. And guess who was schooling him on baseball and doing a very good job?
Who?
Bill de Blasio.
Did he know that that was your son?
Yes.
He did?
Yeah, like the world knows that. Are you kidding? In politics, in the world of politics, yes.
Did he have a little beret?
No, he was actually... No. Melinda will not allow neither of my sons to wear a red beret. But he was very good in breaking down the game of baseball to my son, Carter.
Well, then you know what? How about he steps down as mayor and he becomes baseball commissioner? How about that?
Can we get rid of him as mayor if he does that?
I would personally drive him from the mayor's
mansion. I concur with you. If we could get him out of Gracie Mansion,
and assume he becomes didn't get arrested.
Major League Baseball commissioner, yeah, I agree.
I support
concur.
That, Ken.
Ken,
you
would
think?
Agree that, right? Although, that's right. He's got to be independent and autonomous. He's the news guy. So give us the news headlines and updates.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
Who is this, Curtis?
Iron
Maiden. Oh! I thought you just knew the electronica stuff. I'm really impressed.
You knew
Judas Priest? Yeah. You knew Iron Maiden?
I used to watch MTV, you know, the Headbangers Ball, the light. You know, I was
Oh, good. I'm glad
that.
You finally got Headbangers Ball right because you just were saying some bizarre thing yesterday.
But I always do that. I always botulize the English language. You know, I use spoonerisms, malaprops, the whole nine yards.
You, Bo Deedle. Who else does that?
Well, Bo Deedle, he doesn't do it on purpose. You know, like Dr. Irwin Corey used
true.
To. But Bo Deedle, it's like, it's in his DNA.
Yeah.
He's a Gavone.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty interesting, some of those words that he comes up with. You know what? This is actually a momentous day. Do you know why?
No.
What have we not spoken about that we've been talking about incessantly for weeks now?
Harvey Weinstein, the perv.
Yeah, but unfortunately, because the story has been so in our faces and we've been it's been shoved down our throats, it has raised a lot of concern, a lot of vibrations in corporate America, you know, in Hollywood, obviously, and actually in New York City school system. Interestingly enough, it's a good school, Bronx
High School of Science.
That's a good school, right?
Oh, it's like an elite school. You got to take a special test to get in there. In fact, George Tenet, remember the CIA director for both Clinton and Bush 43?
Yes.
Who stunk out the joint. He went there.
Okay, so it produces smart, people, smart adults who are give a lot to society. Mm-hmm. And some of these people happen to be women who are on the cross-country team. Correct.
I hate cross country. You know, every time I think of cross country because of this time of year, I think of our operationals manager, Matt Dahl. You know, he's a marathon guy. He ran cross country at Ryder College, which I hate, I loathe, I despise. So now that you've brought up the issue of cross country,
why do you have
jaundiced.
A problem with cross country? Well, I don't understand. Because it's exercise?
No. When I used to play football at Brooklyn Prep, we'd watch them go run off to Prospect Park, and we hoped that they would get lost in Prospect Park and never come back to cross-country team.
Because they're healthier and their hearts are pumping and all that stuff.
No,
they were always
pretentious. And they were always smart kids, too.
Well, here's
always
the thing.
Always the smarter kids.
Here's the thing. There's a situation a-brewing within the cross-country team at Bronx Science High School. The cross-country team has been coached by this longtime guy. He's 70-something years old, 76 years old. His name is Kenny Miller. Hmm. And apparently he is beloved by the girls there that he coaches and maybe by the people, the other kids at the school. But unfortunately, he has gotten sort of swirled up indirectly into this whole Harvey Weinstein situation because when he was coaching these kids the other day or recently, he was telling them, he was trying to, you know, give them sort of incentive and move, move, move. And he said, run like you're being chased by a rapist,
Give that to me again. He's telling the girls, the freshman girls cross-country team that he's been the coach of since I think they built Bronx High School of Science and they allowed girls
76 in. Years old. So he's been there. He's been there quite a while. So he says, run like you're being chased by a rapist. Now,
okay, and they run up in Van Cortlandt Park. I've seen cross-country high school teams practice in Van Cortlandt Park, which is a magnificent park, not well-known by a lot of New Yorkers. Run like you're being chased by a rapist.
You sound like you're horrified by this.
Well, first listening to it, I'm like, whoa, guy, couldn't have you have used a different incentive, a different remark to get the barnacle scraped off their backside so they could run faster?
Well, you know, he probably should have used that, some sort of different saying, because he is now being fired by the school system for saying that. And the interesting thing is that the kids are not the ones that are complaining about this. Somebody obviously said something to somebody and some, you know, a mom, whatever.
So I'm looking at this track record for the girls' cross-country coach, Kenny Miller, 76, at Bronx High School of Science, all the girls want him returned as coach. None of them were offended.
None of them were offended. One of them had to have gone and told somebody, you know, a higher up or an adult or whatever.
Maybe an assistant coach.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, good point.
None of the parents have complained.
Well, you know what? You actually, assistant coach. Not that we're trying to bust this person, but interesting theory there. Because assistant coach means that if this guy isn't here, if he gets bumped away,
that's right.
Then assistant coach becomes the head coach.
Yeah, so let's find out.
Not that I'm suggesting that's.
Let's find out from our many listeners here, Juliet Huddy. 76-year-old old Kaji, he's like the age of Bernie the Altacaca Sanders. He gets given his pink slip by the Bronx High School of Science because of what he said, that you got to run like you're being chased by a rapist, to the girls of his cross-country team. They all want him to stay. None of the parents, neither fathers or mothers, have complained about this. Should he be able to be brought back and be the coach of the female cross-country team? Or is the Bronx High School of Science, the School of Brainiacs, correct in dismissing him? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
A lot of overreactions recently. I know, and we talked about this yesterday, you know, with what is an overreaction and what is a legit, you know, sexual harassment comment or move. And the fact is that I don't know. This doesn't strike me. I mean, it's a little crass, but how does it even remotely go into the realm of sexual harassment?
When I played, I remember JV football at Brooklyn Prep High School. It wasn't the best football team. But I remember Coach Duffy would make homophobic remarks about how we were playing when we weren't performing that well. I mean, strong homophobic remarks. Nowadays, right, you would get a pink slip. Did he really mean them? No, because it was the vernacular of the day. He was trying to energize us. He was trying to get us to do better.
But isn't that apples and oranges, though? Because all this, he's not saying run like you're being chased by me, the rapist. I mean, he's saying run I would run if a rapist was.
I'll give you an example. Recently, within the past year, the Bronx High School of Science, not far from Mashula Parkway in Bedford Park in the Bronx, had a problem because they had a fight club on campus. The kids would get together after school, the boys, and they would perform like Eddie Norton and Sean Penn did, you know, in that classic movie Fight Club. Mm-hmm. They'd be duking it out in the park across the street from the school and really get vicious with one another. So a reporter was sent there by the Daily News because he had been tipped off, a guy named Ben Chapman.
I heard about this one.
I had him on the drive at 5.
Right.
These kids were threatening him. We're going to come. We're going to strangle you.
Because they wanted to continue the fight club.
Right. We're going to strangle you. You rat. You ate the Parmesan cheese. You'll pay for this.
What? You ate the Parmesan cheese?
Yeah, meaning you're a rat.
Oh, I see.
You know, you're like Sammy the Bull Gravano.
Got to get the lingo.
You drop dime on us. Nothing ever happened to the kids. They were threatening the reporter from the Daily News.
When was this?
This was like in the last year. In the last year, I remember, in 2016. Nothing happened to the kids there. But they get rid of this old-timer for simply saying, for the first time, run like you're being chased by a rapist to a female members of his cross-country team.
And again, the female members, they call him caring. They say that he's conscientious, and they're really upset about this. I would love to hear if there's anybody, if there are parents from this school who know anything about this teacher or this coach. I'd love to hear that.
And by the way, Nobody's accusing him of giving them massages.
No,
like
I mean,
we've seen
ridiculous.
All these cases of gymnasts who are coming forward, female gymnasts who are claiming that their coaches and their trainers were giving them massages that had nothing to do with injuries or to prevent injuries, but rather was sexually oriented in nature.
Ugh.
None of those allegations are being made, and the guy is going to lose his job at the age of 76.
Yes, so, and he's been teaching there since 1973. So I'm just coming up with theories here. I don't know that any of this is true or has any validity whatsoever, but I would imagine if he's been there that long, he's probably making at the top. He's in the upper echelon of the pay scale,
wouldn't
you think?
Sure. Absolutely.
So, I mean, are they being a little quick? Are they being overreactive because of the climate right now with the Harvey Weinstein stuff at all? Or are they trying to save themselves a little bit of money?
Well, better yet, I'll just ask parents out there if, in fact, this guy was the coach of your daughter and she was involved in the cross-country team of your nearby high school and he had made those comments, run like you're being chased by a rapist, would you want him fired? Or would you want them to put it under review and bring the guy back because he's such a beloved coach to all the gals there?
Or should this have ever even be brought up as an issue at all?
1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Juliet Huddy in the house.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Juliet Huddy in the house.
Yo.
Let's go to the phones. It's Mark in Connecticut. Welcome to WABC, Mark.
Hey, guys. Great show.
Hi, Mark.
Juliet, great to hear you on the radio. Sounds awesome.
Thank you.
Both of my kids play the high school sports, and this is just a bad choice of words. Obviously, bad choice of words.
Yeah, we're talking about this coach from Bronx Science High School. His name's Kenny Miller. He's 76 years old. He's been there since 1973,
yeah.
And he was fired recently for encouraging his girls, the girls on the team, to run. And he said, run like you're being chased by a rapist. That did not go over well, apparently, with somebody at the school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, emotions, obviously, things come out, and you wish you didn't say it. My son played, as Curtis says, wonderfully, smash mouth football. I had stuff with coaches, with that. My daughter played soccer. The coaches are just, that something comes off their tongue that was incorrect. Obviously, all of us know that this was incorrect.
Yeah,
oh, please. Yeah, exactly.
But you see, Mark, in this case, he is not doubling down or being defensive. He has thrown himself on the sword. He has admitted it was absolutely the wrong thing to say. It was offensive. I apologize to all.
Of course.
And yet he still gets sacked.
Yeah, that's not right. Curtis, you got to go over there and straighten him out. Because,
yeah.
At
the end of the day, the guy's been around since, my hair was longer than Julia's back in the 70s. And,
well, that's not hard.
And it's just not, it's, you know, come on.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah
not
he's,
right.
He's been teaching there since 72.
But hold
on. When I started the Guardian Angels in 79, one of the first things we would do.
I was 9 years old.
Oh, you were?
Oh, I mean, I wasn't born yet.
Anyway, I used to take the 4 train up to Bedford Park. We'd walk over because it was DeWitt Clinton High School that had like 4,000 kids. And they'd walk over to Bronx High School of Science and vamp those kids.
And
we'd
what?
Have to vamp them, beat them up.
Oh, that's how delightful.
And so we would protect the kids. We would set up a safe corridor on their way to the train. They run like bandits to get the hell out of there.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, so they owe me there. Bronx High School of Science. Anyway, let's go to Marcus all the way in Dalton, Georgia. Welcome to Curtis and
Georgia.
Yeah, and Juliet Huddy here.
Hey, how are you doing?
Oh, I love that accent.
Oh, it's not really an accent, but I don't have a Georgia accent. I'm actually from Colorado, but
there's some accent I'm hearing. But so what do you think? You've got daughters?
Yes, I have 2 daughters, and both of them are beautiful. They're both in college, but for just an older man like that to say something, I really don't see it's a real issue or problem. Besides, I think a lot of girls should learn how to run from rapists. So, I mean, it might be good training for them.
I kind of agree with you. I mean,
I think it's great advice.
Could be blunt, but. Well, here's the weird thing, though. If you peel the layers a little bit.
Yes.
This guy, this Coach Miller, he apparently flagged another coach's behavior. And apparently the school was not too happy with him for getting bad publicity.
Ah, so we're talking vengeance, a vendetta. I think I got to go over to Bronx High School of Science and put those administrators on the shelf.
Curtis Sliwa.
Boom! The search for Common Ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa
from
the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yes.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of one, as we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. I am joined, so nice, it's back-to-back, belly-to-belly for a second day twice, Juliet Hutt.
Hello, Curtis. Somebody asked on Twitter if you have gotten on my nerves yet, and I said, more like the other way around. Has it happened?
Yeah, you're definitely getting on my nerves.
Within like 30 seconds of coming in here yesterday, probably.
Yeah, because I'm having flashbacks of all those years we spent together on the set when you were hosting Good Day Early Call New York and Channel 5, and I would stop by like 3 days a week to give my impression on the news of the day, and you would give me grief.
Well, you deserved it. But I have to say I'm not having flashbacks because you're very different from the way you used to be. You just seem, I don't know, there's just a bounce in your step and
really?
Collagen in your face.
Are you calling me soft?
No, I think that you seem happy. You seem, well, I mean, you know, as happy as a miserable person like you can be, but.
How the hell am I happy when every caller calls up and naturally it's like they got a tick? You know, it's like a tick you have. Hey, how you doing? I've had better days, pal.
Your lead in is pretty much says it all. I mean, people call you a hero. Don Imus calls you a hero.
Well, that's a great compliment.
Yes. So, I mean, this is, you should be very happy. You should
but
be very with proud.
But you here, you know what I feel like?
Like,
I'm a hero.
Running for the hills?
No, a hero. And what's in the middle of that sub right now is
cheese.
A little gabagool. A little gabagool. And a little bit of liverwish.
A little what?
Liverwish.
Liverwish?
Yeah, you ever have liverwish? You never had liverwish?
Liverwurst?
Yeah.
Liverwurst. Oh, is that like
mutsu? You know.
Yeah, no, I've had no liverwurst.
Okay, so I'm gonna bring you in a sandwich, a hero.
So I'm like some slimy
and liverwurst,
soft,
big
goo.
Half inch pieces of liverwurst.
Okay,
and that'll make your day. But anyway,
prefer like a nice crunchy piece of lettuce.
You're not getting that. This is not veggie.
A ripe tomato.
But nobody's backing down in this latest battle that the president is engaged with. It's like a battle a day. This time it's with Cowboy Girl, the congresswoman from Florida.
Who is very passionate and who's standing her ground.
She claims that she was in the car with the widow of the slain Marine, one of four who was killed on that special assignment in Niger as they were tracking down ISIS, Sergeant Johnson. So in that car on the way to Miami International Airport to actually pick up the body to bring it for the wake and burial.
An obviously emotional, intense time for everybody involved.
Right. We know there were four people in that car. There was a master sergeant who was accompanying them.
Right.
There was the congresswoman, Cowboy Girl.
Frederica Wilson.
Right. There was the widow herself. And there was her mother-in-law, the mother of the slain Marine Sergeant Johnson.
Right.
And they, at least the congresswoman, is telling a different story than what the president said originally. And then yesterday, unexpectedly, the chief of staff of the White House, General John Kelly, took to the microphone to address the media on this issue since he was in the room.
Right.
When the president was making the calls to the four families of the slain Marines.
I was stunned when I came to work yesterday morning and brokenhearted at what I saw a member of Congress doing. A member of Congress who listened in on a phone call from the president of the United States to a young wife. And in his way, tried to express that opinion that he's a brave man. A fallen hero. He knew what he was getting himself into because he enlisted. There's no reason to enlist. He enlisted.
You know what? When I heard this yesterday, when I heard this soundbite, I thought the first thing that struck me was he said, in his way, referring to the president. You know, I think it's fair to say, whether you support the president or not, he does not always have a way with words. He is not a wordsmith, sometimes at the most inopportune times.
To the president's credit, he was seeking counsel.
Correct.
From General Kelly. He wasn't being pretentious as he usually is. I know how to handle this.
Right.
He was asking him, gee, what do I say? How do I go about handling this?
But the fact is that he said something. So apparently, he said something, according to Frederica Wilson, the congresswoman, who you like to call cowgirl.
Cowboy.
Cowgirl. That was, you know, it was offensive. She felt it was offensive and sort of belittling to the widow. That there's nothing, we talked about this yesterday, that there's nothing like hearing a father whose own child was killed in action speak up about this Colgate thing, that as people are now calling it. You know, this man lost his own son. This man has a right to talk about this type of thing. And I think the words, the phrase Trump's, it was the way he said it. He suggested this was not something that Trump was trying to do.
But he went on to talk about what the president actually did.
He was doing exactly what he wanted to do when he was killed. He knew what he was getting into by joining that 1%. He knew what the possibilities were because we're at war. And when he died, in the four cases we're talking about, Niger, my son's case in Afghanistan, when he died, he was surrounded by the best men on this earth, his friends. That's what the president tried to say to four families the other day.
And then he really unloaded on the congresswoman.
It stuns me that a member of Congress would have listened in on that conversation. Absolutely stuns me. And I thought at least that was sacred.
But the congresswoman would not leave it go. Based on what Kelly said yesterday, you would have thought, okay, it's canceled out. Kelly was in the room. He heard what the president was saying. He was guiding the president in terms of what he was saying. But oh no, the congresswoman decided to take another shot at the president.
Maisha Johnson, you call her by her name and you say, your husband. You don't say, your guy. They were married. You say, I am so sorry. You have our deepest sympathy. If there's anything this nation can do to ease your pain as your president, please let me know. I am so sorry.
Well, the question is, what are her intentions here? Because this whole thing should have been put to sleep a while ago. It never actually should have happened. But what are her intentions? Is she just trying to call attention to herself, trying to get some publicity, or is she truly passionately affected by what she heard in the car? Now, you know, no disrespect to Chief of Staff, but if the widow put the phone call on speaker, or if it was loud enough so that people in the car could hear, it's not the congresswoman's fault.
No, I understand, but the most experienced person in dealing with that scenario is obviously General Kelly. If he was guiding the president, if he was in the room, and he didn't think that there was anything that was tawdry or off the hook or had to be restated, then I think we have to leave it alone. There are so many other serious issues we're dealing with here. But the congresswoman will not let it go.
Well, but do you think, though, that
what I know is she's getting more attention than she's ever had in her life. And let's face it, she hates Trump. She's said that in the past. Democrats hate Trump. And this is just another reason to stick a shiv in him. It's like it's the Ides of March every day for Democrats. You know me. I don't like this president. But I'm gonna listen to him on each and every issue. And on this one, I don't think the congresswoman and his critics have a leg to stand on. Let's open up the phones. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Rich, who's first up in the queue. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Rich.
Hey, Rich.
You guys are going to give this guy the benefit of the doubt.
Who? Which guy?
When you were talking about the so-called president. You're going to give him the benefit of the doubt that he is being forthright and truthful, and he's sensitive. He is not. He went ahead and said, and it's his fault, because what he should have done was he should have said, listen, I misspoke. I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry, but, you know, this person made the ultimate sacrifice, and I should have used the much
more. I agree with you. I totally agree with you. I think it was ridiculous that he doubled down and he kept, which is what he does. I mean, I'm not cutting him any slack.
But the problem is that I hear from Curtis, and I hear from the Trumpers and the Trumpets that this president should be cut slack, that things are it's
Rich,
not a problem.
Rich,
who's saying that?
There's enough. There are enough issues to go at this president on. If you got General Kelly, who is more? Wait a second. Who's more? Rich. Who is more experienced in dealing with these matters? General Kelly, the Congresswoman, the President of the United States. It's clear General Kelly is, and he's given the president a clean bill of health.
But he is the chief of staff. Doesn't he sort of have an obligation to protect the president?
Are you calling Kelly a liar, Rich?
He is a liar. Get
lost, ballot.
Whoa, 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 it's so partisan.
No, it's so partisan. The guy has lost his own son in Afghanistan.
I agree with you, but he is the chief of staff to the president of the United States.
So the point is, he's not entitled to an opinion.
No, he is, but I think, you know, you have to wonder.
Who is this congresswoman? Who is she?
She's been around for a long time.
Yeah, and she's been no friend to the military.
Well, but in fact, she was offended by what he said. Like it or not, she was offended by what he said.
If you listen to the press conference later on, we don't have that cut. Kelly talked about how when he went down to FBI headquarters, they were dedicating a wall in honor of these FBI agents who were killed in a drug battle down in Dade County. And she was there. Her speech did not at all reflect positively on the slain agents and their families. And most importantly, he said Comey had given an outstanding speech that day, which, as you know, probably did not get an applause from the president on that. He was praising Comey. So that shows me he was being balanced. He praised Comey for the speech he gave that day in Miami. And he said the congresswoman who represented that area really dropped the ball on the FBI agents there who were there to honor their fellow agents who died in that drug battle. And the families who were there honor them with that commemoration.
The fact is that we weren't there. We didn't hear the phone call. I don't really want to hear if they have proof that there was a phone call, as the president said. I could care less. All sides have politicized what is a tragic, horrible thing to happen to a young man and to his pregnant widow. And this whole thing should have been dropped. And frankly, they're all just waiting in the cesspool.
This woman's wearing a cowboy hat, huh?
People like to do that down in Texas.
Texas, not Florida. Let's go to Gary in Millbourne. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC.
Hi, Gary.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, Curtis. You remember me? You gave me the number to the YMCA for the homeless when my church was feeding the homeless, just letting you know, it was like a couple months back. Thank you so much for that information.
Oh, no problem.
He's a hero.
Yeah, he is a hero. I just have a problem with the situation. Look, Trump said he had proof. I want to see the proof. That's all I want to say. I have a problem with even the congresswoman who said I'm a rock star. I didn't like that when she said that. That bothered me. But Trump said he had a proof. And the problem with the situation is, after this got out of hand, got ugly, Kelly came on the podium. How many times this guy will come on the podium in the middle of the day to explain, to defend Trump?
Well, it's funny that you say that, because there are a lot of people who feel like he's the one, he's basically the babysitter of the White House, and he's sort of like the great equalizer at this point.
Gary asked for the proof. That was the proof. The chief of staff guided the president in these calls, because the president asked him, how do you think I should handle
it? I think people have a legitimate gripe by thinking that maybe this was a loaded statement, that he has to, as chief of staff, he has to back his guy.
Yeah, but this is just continued hate for Trump.
Every time. Gross all the way around.
You see, that's what happens, is if you're always attacking Trump after a while.
It's like the boy that cried wolf.
Right. They're not going to pay attention to you because they just sense you just hate Trump. 1-800-848-WABC.
Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Let's go to the phones. Juliet Huddy in the house.
Good day.
And it's John in Staten Island. Welcome to WABC, Johnny.
How you doing?
I've had better days.
You know, I listened to that speech last night by General Kelly, and I was truly moved.
What? Really, now, what was it that moved you, and how did it make you feel? Did it change your mind at all from prior to him speaking?
Didn't change my mind at all. I knew that Trump was trying to do the best he could, the type of man that he is. He at least he had the common decency to pick up the phone and to call this woman up. Now, the Democrats, the liberal Democrats, of course, will pounce on him for every little thing that he does. If you turn on CNN, you turn on MSNBC, all they do is constantly pound on Trump. It's a disgrace what's going on in this country. We are so honored to have a man like General Kelly today that my wife had tears in her eyes. It was really moving.
You see that? How do you compare cowgirl there with the stupid cowboy hat on her head, the congressman from Florida, and believe her versus General Kelly?
Well, I'm not saying that. I just think that the president spoke in a way that was just not very delicate, and it was hurtful. I believe that. I don't think the woman is lying. I just think that she took it to another level.
She's embellishing. She's
making something
of it that she shouldn't be.
Curtis, if again, God forbid, anything ever happened to my husband, who was a soldier, and the president said that to me, I would want to reach through the phone and strangle him. It would be so offensive, even though it is something that is actually accurate. And these Green Berets wouldn't tell you themselves.
The congresswoman, Cal Gore, admitted she didn't listen to the whole conversation. Let's go to Barry in New York. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Barry?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Actually, I'm not going to ask because I already know how Curtis is. look, my only comment is that if the widow is offended by what the president said, and I give him credit for making the call because I wouldn't want to do it, but if she's offended, if the widow's offended, then the widow should have gone to the media, not this congressperson.
Well, the widow, rightly so, is being quiet about this. I don't think she has any obligation, and even at this point, I don't think she has any obligation to go and say anything.
Wouldn't she be, in this case, the tiebreaker?
You know, but then she's perpetuating this nonsense. This whole thing has gotten completely out of control.
Let's go, if we can, Juliet, to Russell in White Plains. Welcome to WABC. Russ.
Hi, Russ.
Curtis, you're right. Trump's intentions were good. He just doesn't have any empathy. I think Kelly tripped him up, maybe on purpose, maybe not. But the way a general speaks to a general about his dead son is not the way the president should speak to a widow. And if Kelly told him to say this, I think Kelly's just tired of cleaning bedpans in the adult daycare center. I think that's what's going on.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
Wow, and you believe cowgirl, you know, with the cowboy hat there, who looks like she's one step away from having dementia and Alzheimer's?
Oh, Curtis!
I mean, seriously, you've heard her talk.
What's with you?
She sounds that. Come on, Russ, admit it. You believe in cowgirl?
She sounds elderly.
She reminds me of Ruben Diaz in the Bronx. If he can wear a cowboy hat, she can't.
Yeah, and he's an out the cocker just like she is. I can't believe.
What? I mean, look at you with your beret that you wear in the shower.
Compared to Kelly versus this congresswoman.
Wait, I'm not comparing the two. That has nothing. It's apples and oranges. I'm not comparing.
Well, we'll give you an opportunity to weigh in on what the president said yesterday, and the White House Chief of Staff Kelly did not try to clean up his remarks when he sat with the governor of Puerto Rico, who was there in the West Wing to try to get more shimolis to help his embattled island of Puerto Rico. But before we move in that direction, Juliet Huddy, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
JJ, Curtis Sliwa. You know what the song is called? Boricua Posse.
Very good.
Oh, well, I have it in front of me.
It's in my rotation.
It's Boricua good. Posse. Now, this is hip.
That's what you'll
like
hear when you're walking up Fifth Avenue from many of the stages. Actually, the impromptu concerts that are put on during the Puerto Rican Day Parade.
Oh, I love it.
That's a song that you can hear vibrating through the canyons at Fifth Avenue.
It brings me back. It brings me back to childhood. Did you? I know you're fascinated by my life and me in general, Curtis. Did you know that I grew up in Miami?
Yeah, I knew that.
Did you know that my mom was a singer?
No, that I didn't know.
So she was
the one who sang the Chiquita Banana song.
No,
right?
But she was on the Tonight Show. She sang on the Tonight Show. But so we were in Miami, and she used to go down. We used to fly down to the islands like Curacao, Aruba, Puerto Rico, and I spent a lot of time there as a little kid. So I became, you know, I have a love like you do. I have a love for the Puerto Rican people. Oh, I have a love for the island.
So you were at the San Juan Hilton while the casino was cooking and your mom was performing.
I would be at the performances. She would do like a 10 and a midnight show, and I would be there like a little kid. I would bring my Barbies and hang out there in the booths, you know, and I would watch her sing. It was so cool, but I remember those days so well. And I love Puerto Rico, and right now it kills me, and I know you feel the same way, watching these people down there suffering. They don't have water. They don't have electricity. You know, it's just one thing after the next. But yet, as we talk about this, and as we were sitting there yesterday, too, doing this show, we were watching CNN, and we were watching, you know, we could just see the president, and he was sitting with the governor of Puerto Rico, and I saw the breaking news flashes go at the bottom of the screen, and I'm reading the content. I'm going, you got to be freaking kidding me. Asked about how they're doing, and you know what he said. Everything has been fantastic. The United States has been absolutely on target as far as handling what's been happening in Puerto Rico since the aftermath.
Let's go to the audio tape. This was the president in the West Wing yesterday sitting with the governor of Puerto Rico, who was there to try to get more money for the relief and recovery after Hurricane Maria leveled the island a month ago.
I think we've done a really great job, and we've had tremendous cooperation from the governor, and we are getting there, and people are really seeing the effort that's been put into Puerto Rico.
Now,
are they?
Well, the president graded himself. You know, he's always giving himself grades.
So you would think if he's doing like an A to F scale or a 1 to 10 scale, you know, you kind of throw yourself somewhere in the middle there so you don't, you know,
no.
Obviously the place, it doesn't have electricity.
I don't think
there's still so much damage.
I don't
damage.
Think this president has ever even given himself an A minus. It's either an A, A plus, or more.
It was a 10. I'd say it was probably the most difficult when you talk about relief, when you talk about search, when you talk about all of the different levels. And even when you talk about lives saved, you look at the number. I mean, this was, I think it was worse than Katrina.
Well, you know, he doesn't get along, obviously, as we know, with the mayor of San Juan. But he does seem to have a fairly amiable relationship with the governor, who was sitting next to him, the guy looks exactly like Donald Trump Jr. I don't know if anybody else caught that, but I did. But that's all. That's an aside. So as the president of the United States is sitting there with the governor, he turns to this governor and says, basically puts him on the spot saying, you know, how are we doing? How are we doing there?
And so naturally,
you responded immediately, sir, and you did so. You know, Tom and Brock, they have been on the phone with me essentially every day since the disaster. We recognize that there are some logistical limitations that we have in Puerto Rico. We didn't have the ports open for a couple of days. We didn't have the airports working full capacity until about a day or two ago.
He was—he had to act like a sock puppet. What could he say? He's there to try to get more money. If he in any way, shape, or form slighted this president, who gets slighted easily, it could have come back to haunt the residents who, most of whom still do not have water, still do not have power. And it's expected they probably won't have most of what we would commonly take for granted in our society, probably not till well after Three Kings Day, Christmas, New Year's, that time of year.
Can you imagine, though, the love of the American people, not just those down living down on the island itself, if this governor actually said, you know, looked at the president and said, you know what? No, most of us don't have electricity. Most of us don't have the basics that you need. Some of us don't have houses or roofs over our heads. We're living in fear because the gangs, as you were telling me, you know, guardian angels are down there.
Yes.
You know, it's hell right now down there. Wouldn't that have gone over a little? Why is he worried about what the president is going to say? Not that we know that he is, but I mean, he shouldn't have been tiptoeing around. This was the time. You've got a national audience, an international audience watching you stand up for your people. Get the supplies. Get the ships down there from Jacksonville, Naval Air Station in Jacksonville.
I think the reason he has agreed to be a sock puppet every step of the way is he recognizes this president, his temperament, that any perceived of slight could come back, as I said, to either not move as quickly supplies that are desperately needed or FEMA operatives or other specialists.
But Curtis, it's two stories being told. It's like one person is living on planet Earth, one person is living in Neptune. You have people saying everything is fine there, including the president of the United States saying, "Yeah, it's a 10. This has been handled wonderfully."
Well, let's find out from our many listeners.
All right, let's do it,
ladies and gentlemen. Do you think the president is entitled to give himself a 10 mark for the response to the island of Puerto Rico? The response to the governor, who was like his sock puppet there, just nodding his head in agreement? Or are you of the type like myself, who actually has guardian angels there with boots on the ground, who are in places where yet FEMA has yet to go, up in the mountains, where people haven't seen any resources whatsoever? Although it's recognized you can't trust the local politicians because they're crooked. If you give them the supplies, they'll only give it to the people who voted for them, not the opposition. The gangs roam the streets. The cops are assigned to doing traffic duty because there's no electricity, so naturally they have to guide the traffic. So there's chaos on the island, in addition to the fact that a lot of these places still in the rural areas have not been reached by either federal or Commonwealth authorities.
Yeah, the infrastructure was a disaster.
1-800-848-WABC. Let's go, if we can, to Lee, who's first up in the queue from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Lee?
Long Island.
Yes, hello, Lee.
Oh, I'm sorry. I only want to say one thing. I don't want to get into a discussion, but you guys are complaining about how poor the service was to get electric back into Puerto Rico. Most of the island is still without electric. Long Beach, Long Island, during Katrina, went 5 weeks without electric. Here
right.
You have an island 100 miles away from the American shore, and you expect miracles. I think you're living in a dream.
Miracle? It's a commonwealth of our country. There are Americans down there. It's not just the electricity. It's everything. There's water that's just sitting there not being delivered. You don't think that if we sent military in some fashion down there, that this situation would be taken care of a little bit quicker than it has been?
Yeah, all you have to do is send military in there to do that, and you Democrats would be up in arms. How can you send
military? Okay, first of all, you don't even know me. I'm not a Democrat. I'm independent. So just because I'm not sticking up for your fair,
your fair
Donald Trump, the president of the United States,
Lee,
doesn't mean that,
Lee,
that I'm...
Let me frame it in this way. If when you were waiting 5 weeks for the power to be restored in Long Beach after the Superstorm Sandy devastated the area, if Governor Cuomo and Chuck Schumer and the others who were having a press conference today gave themselves a 10...
Thank you.
...and said that, they were doing a magnificent job, would you have agreed with them then, Lee?
No, because you're in the States. You're on land. You're not 100 miles away from the nearest.
Lee, couldn't the president have just said, you know, I would say we're at about 7 here. We've gotten the supplies there, but we still have to figure out a way to get the supplies and the resource into a lot of the rural areas. We still got to figure out a lot of the other complex issues that it did. Wouldn't that have been a lot more pragmatic to give himself a 7 instead of a 10? You can't do any better than a 10.
Well, he certainly might have.
Okay, all right, so that's all we're saying here. We're not saying he's done a bad job. We're just saying, why do you take victory laps a month after the storm when most of the people still don't have electricity, still don't have water?
You don't think he's done a bad job?
No, I don't. I think he's gotten the supplies there.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, like I said, because I have guardian angels there, Juliet, is that you can't give it to the local officials like you would do here.
Right.
Because they hoard it and give it only to their supporters.
Okay, then why don't we have something in place that can then usurp the power that those officials...
Well, it should be the military. The military should drop in.
So why are we not there?
Create a secure area and then begin the handing out of the badly needed supplies to make sure that the crooked politicians and the gangs don't get their hands
on. Right, and think about this. You're not only potentially living in a house that's been devastated... You may not have anything to drink or eat. You may be being threatened. You know, your possessions and your lives could be threatened by gangs. I mean, this isn't, and it's hot down there, by the way, too.
And the other thing is, if we don't help them repair their island, they're all coming here. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to the phones. It's Lou in Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC.
Louis. Hey, Lou.
You know, hello. You know, I want to mention something, Curtis. You know, Puerto Rico is required to pay SS, Social Security, and Medicare insurance, but they're not required to pay any federal taxes. And so when they complain about us not getting there in time or spending enough money, we should keep that in consideration.
All right, but remember, recently in their plebiscite, they voted to become a state. It's still a long, arduous process for that to take place. That meant they knowingly voted for the fact that they would end up paying federal income taxes. And they are Americans, Lou. And if we don't take care of them there, Lou, guess where they're coming? They're coming here to the mainland. You do realize that, Lou?
No, I agree with you. But as I said, you know, they have put no money into the federal pot. And sometimes I think we've done as much as we can for them.
Oh,
and,
come on, you know, Lou.
Well,
these people are suffering.
What are you talking about?
Look, really? Because these people are down there suffering with no water, no electricity. This has been a month.
And not only that, we waste billions on the crooks in Afghanistan and Iraq who don't even appreciate what we've done for them. But let me tell everybody tonight. You can join the Guardian Angels and the great salsa performer, Willie Colon.
Ooh.
We've teamed up with him in our continued efforts to help people on the island of Puerto Rico. It's a fundraiser at the Church of St. Joseph, Prospect Heights, Brooklyn, 856 Pacific Street, 630. You can come contribute there, help our efforts to help those in Puerto Rico help themselves.
Curtis Sliwa.
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of the Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
I like the flow.
Yes.
This is a real headbangers ball today here with Juliet.
Hey, listen.
This is a good song.
I know. Thank you very much.
Hey, Brian Mongalooch, you hipster millennial that I hate, please send me the link to this. What's the name of this song?
The song is called Brother Go On by a band, a New York area band called Blackwater Rising. Also, my husband was in that one, too. But I'm very close with all the folks in the band.
What, is your husband like a gypsy? You've already mentioned he's been with like three or four bands.
He gets around like his wife. No, just kidding. No, but that's Blackwater Rising. They're actually going to be playing. You know what? I'm officially inviting you to Wantagh on November 4th. I think it's a Saturday. They are going to be playing at Mulcahy's in Wantagh. And
well,
I think you should go with me.
I would, but
and
November
bring your
4th,
girlfriend.
And I haven't mentioned this at all. I'm going to be in Denver. It is the debut of the documentary about yours truly, me, and the Guardian Angels called Vigilante at the Denver Film Festival.
Well, then I understand why you would have to miss
I would definitely have come out to Wantagh.
See, there you go. All right, well then,
and,
you know what I'll find out.
What's the name of that group again?
Blackwater Rising. Great, great band. Good friends of mine.
Is that a premonition to another hurricane hitting our shores out in Long Island there?
God, please, God, no. And only one of them lives out on Long Island, so.
But that is a damn good song.
I know. Thank you. And by the way, there a bunch of them are listening right now, so I didn't tell them to say this either. Kurt, you don't give your you know your validation unless you actually really.
No, you saw my head.
I know I was
diddy bopping here. It was a great addition to the Headbangers Ball, the old MTV show that I used to watch whenever I could. It was a great show.
So you just let Mama pick the songs and you'll be very happy. You'll be rocking out.
And
you know,
where heavy metal rules, where I found out in visiting one of my many Guardian Angel chapters around the world.
Mexico
City.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, they have a great festival there.
They fill up Azteca Stadium, 100,000 people with Headbanger Ball maniacs.
Yep.
With all the throwback shirts.
Oh, it's awesome.
They don't have 2 pesos to rub together to get a taco. And yet, they'll get one of those shirts, and they come all dressed in the regalia.
Oh, yeah, and they get great bands at these things,
too. They can't speak English, but they lip-sync the words in
English. Music is the universal language, and metal has more fans around the world than I think, it's at least in one or two, the top music genres.
I'm not a fan of metal because I still have metal particuli floating around in me from those hollow point bullets that I got shot up.
Let's call it rock then. How about that? Yeah, well, you got
heavy
rocks
metal,
in your head.
Heavy metal. I like that much better. But anyway, we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us to conduct this broadcast. So nice, back to back, belly to belly, Juliet Huddy, formerly of Fox News, and where I was with her for 4 years in the mornings at Channel 5 locally here on Good Day Early Call New York.
Yeah.
She's in the house.
Hi.
And what is the subject?
Well, you used to come in when we were on Fox 5. You would come in. One time you came in at 4:30 in the morning without any shoes on, and we discussed this yesterday. It's because you were out
dancing,
gallivanting,
all night, whirling,
carousing. Garbage. But at the time, now you used to tip it back a cocktail or two.
Oh,
at that
time. I was half in the bag.
But I was happy to find out yesterday that you said that you have given up because of your various
maladies. Well, I have
maladies.
Colitis, ileitis, Crohn's disease. I can't even look at alcohol or it will cause me to have to go to the ER.
Okay, well, that's probably good news. Your kids are probably, well, are they happy? Have they noticed? Were you the type that would
never drank in front of them?
You never, like, not even a beer?
Only when I would go to the after-hour clubs in the wee hours of the morning. And that was just because I had already been dancing for an hour or two. And boy, would that limber you up. You'd be like Gumby on the dance floor.
You'd be like, well, listen,
well,
apparently.
Look, you saw me dance.
You were a great dancer. You were, and no joke.
When I would slow dance with a woman, she would have to go for a pregnancy test the next day.
Oh, God.
I'm just describing
it. I didn't need to hear that.
Just describing it.
That just made me throw up a little bit. Well, anyway, it's good that you didn't drink in front of your kids because a lot of kids are saying there was a research that just came out that a lot of kids, parents, you're not thinking about this when you're drinking, even if you're just having a few cocktails with the girls, kids get very anxious about this. Some kids do because they get worried that, you know, obviously they're worried that they see what happens after the second or third or sixth bottle of wine, you know, when mom is hanging out with the girls. And the mom starts getting really silly, and then maybe the kid has a friend over, and the friend's, you know, the kid's embarrassed because the friend is watching, you know, his mom acting a fool, as the kids like to say. So, you know, you got to kind of tone it down, it looks like. I don't know. I don't have kids. I actually loved it when my mom drank because she didn't bother me anymore.
Yeah, when I was growing up, I would go into a household in which you know, they were like, they believed it should take 3 days to get up enough moisture in your mouth to spit. They were just prohibitionists.
Oh, wow.
That was my father. My father, Chester, he would not permit alcohol in the house because my grandfather on my Polish side, Anton, was a real lush.
Oh, okay.
Like a lot of guys at that time. He was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
So my dad would never drink, even though he's a merchant seaman for 46 years. He would never drink.
My dad was involved in the television world, and he was out reviewing rock bands, and he never had to drink either. Mm. My mom did.
What was
my
interesting?
My mom likes the cocktails.
I'd go to some other friends' homes, and my friends would want their parents to drink because it would loosen them up.
Oh, I loved it.
They were sort of inhibited. You know, they were very, they weren't extroverts. And then all of a sudden, they'd have a few belts in them, and they were talking to me like I was their son.
Like, you know? Yeah, well, or like a friend.
Right, they're telling jokes.
Right.
Say, hey, you want to go upstairs and watch TV? Go ahead, go into the master bedroom. I was like, wow, that's not like typically the way your dad or mama. They said, yeah, they've got a few belts in them. They're really different kind of people. They're really nice to be with when they're drinking.
I was the same way. I mean, my mom would have her friends over, and they would sit there, and they would have their caipirinhas and whatever, their beer. And I loved it. It was like all of a sudden the kids, you know, it was the next door neighbor that would come over. The kids, we would all just be, you know, running around the neighborhood free and enjoying our lives, and our moms would be sitting there having their drinks. I loved it.
Let's find out from our many listeners out there. Did you find that when you were growing up, if you were in a household in which the alcohol flowed, that you had anxiety, you got really anxious when your parents would all of a sudden start pouring the drinks, drinking it, you know, knocking it down the hatch or handing it out to others? Or did you actually welcome that because a whole different side of your parents came to the forefront in which they were all of a sudden extroverts, they were party hardy, they were happy, and they basically left you alone. They weren't on your, you know, weren't constantly berating you. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
I saw one of my friend's kids. We were out drinking. I'd gone out to visit her. She was living out on the island, and I went out, and we had some cocktails and everything. We came back, and the kid knew that we had been out drinking, and he flipped out. I felt so sorry for him. He was hysterical. He was crying. Mm. We were acting completely normal. It wasn't like we were, you know, falling down drooling, but he was very affected by it, and that always affected me. I thought, God, I mean, again, I don't have children, but you really do have to watch yourself in those circumstances.
I'm wondering,
watch your behavior.
If any of our listeners, Juliet Huddy, were like my father, who would have to go to the local gin mill in Chicago and bring my grandfather home late at night, like a lot of men at that time. In fact, my father tells a great story. When he was growing up, he was the oldest of four boys. He says, one morning he wakes up on a Sunday morning and he says to my grandmother, my Polish grandmother, Wanda, who's that man sitting at the table? He's like 4 or 5. And she goes, that's your father.
Oh.
The reason is because, remember, the men would get up like 4 o'clock in the morning to go off to work. They wouldn't get home until very late at night. It was already dark. And they'd go right to the gin mill.
Yeah.
And so then generally the women, you know, the wives would have to go retrieve them from the gin mill, bring them home, put them to bed. And they'd be up like at 4, out the door at 4:30. And they had to work 6 days a week back then, sometimes 7.
Kind of like you today.
Yeah. My father did not know who his father was until about 4 or 5 because he just wasn't used to seeing my grandfather around, because we take it for granted now, you know, 5-day work week, 40-hour work, work week, you want to multitask.
This was like in the 1800s.
No,
right?
Not 1800s. we're talking about during, actually.
The early 1900s.
It was during Prohibition.
Okay.
So my grandfather was going to the speakeasies and the local gin mills that would sell alcohol illegally, sometimes bathtub gin, as they called it, or what they called sort of warm beer, because they would process that beer and then bring it right over from the illegal breweries.
Okay, so understandable that he might have had some anxiety, but if we're talking about, you know, your parents just tipping back a few, out with the friends, or the friends come over, you know, is that affecting your children more than you think it is?
1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Ellie first up in the queue in New York. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Elle?
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
So when I was a kid, I was like hearing you guys talk and brought back all these memories. We were living in the base camp of the Himalayas. My dad was a commanding officer out of the base camp, and he was a doctor. And, you know, the culture was all about drinking. Everybody would drink, and they had this mess hall, you know, it's called like a canteen hall, like a place where they would go and meet. And they were all drinking from like 3 in the afternoon onwards. And then we would have a lot of parties in our house. So every evening the kids would hope that the parents would have the drinking buddies come over and have the card games going on, because we would have that freedom to go to whatever we wanted.
Oh, it was the best, right? Yeah, but your parents probably weren't coming home then or you know, at home fighting with each other and getting really loud or violent. I mean, it sounds like your parents kind of kept it together.
Yeah, and then they would have all these things in the house where the card games would go on, but the kids would, yeah. You know, all the other people's kids would come over. But every evening we would make these superstitious wishes. Like, you know, kids have all these things that they do in their heads and they come up with all these things. So we would put a rock on top of another rock, and then we would spit on it and we would make a wish. Saying,
hey,
let's hope some people come over this evening.
Me too. But then you would see some of them after they were booze hounds for a while. They would have the Jake leg, which was one step forward, two steps backwards, and they would have the Rum Rouge.
Oh,
you know, which
yeah.
was all of the blood vessels underneath their skin would start protruding because it was saturated with alcohol. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Paulie calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Juliet Huddy here at WABC, Paul.
And Curtis.
Paul from Dover, is that me?
That's you.
Oh, wow. I've never done this before, but it's great to speak with Curtis. And I'm sorry, man, but I'm new to your name.
My name is Juliet, as in Romeo. Juliet. Huddy, as in buddy.
That's great. And Curtis is such a Romeo, so that's perfect.
So what do you think? What happened when your parents drank?
Yes, I was raised by two very, very good parents, but we were lower middle class, but my mom would specifically save up so that we could go out of school for a week and go on a ski trip up north and with relatives, and it was a big gang of us, and alcohol was always part of the event. And I don't remember ever being embarrassed, or I don't remember any relatives being drunk, as you would guess. You know, none of that falling down drunk or loud or, you know, very always well behaved. But you could tell when they were socially lubricated, so to speak, you know.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. But then there are the others, like my Uncle Steve, who was a real booze hound. He was married to my Aunt Mary. He was constantly an alcoholic. He worked at the Rheingold Brewery in Bushwick.
Oh,
he worked
boy.
At Chafer on down in Williamsburg, and he would test the beer. Unfortunately, he would test the beer morning, noon, and night.
He would be like tipping back an entire 40.
And when
40.
He was occasionally sane and sober, which wasn't often, he was a really great guy to deal with.
But could you tell when he was drunk?
Oh, he was drunk most of the time, polluted, and man, he was a SOB.
Oh, see,
really
that's,
was.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And to everybody. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
To the phones we go. Juliet Huddy in the house. Let's go to Don, who I believe is calling from New Jersey. Welcome to WABC, Donnie.
Hey, Curtis. Hey, Juliet.
Hey.
First of all, it's a breath of fresh air having Juliet on. I wish it was going to be forever. It's really fun to listen to.
Send you the check later.
And the thing I wanted to say was, it's very important for parents to drink in front of their kids, I believe, because
Ooh.
It sets the right tone. Of course, drink responsibly, but I sent two sons off to college, and they would tell me how their friends would just get faced every weekend. One particular kid would drink till he fell down every time he drank, and my sons were like aghast because they had never seen me or my wife under the influence, but they had seen us drink regularly.
Kind of like the European model where, you know, they're
precisely.
Used to seeing their parents, you know, drink responsibly, have wine with meals and stuff like that, even if it's lunch. It's just, it's not, it doesn't, it didn't have the, you know, that sort of, that cloud that hangs over a lot of the houses here in our country.
And it was such a joy to hear that from him because, to be fair, I had probably been under the influence a few times in front of him, but they had the overall feeling that didn't happen, and they could be the one in a crowd, which is what really impressed me, to not abuse it.
Good for you. Well, good parenting.
Let's flip the script to Mary, who's calling from Rockland County. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Mayor.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, I love you guys.
Oh.
There's nothing wrong with having a beer in front of you. It's dinner time or, you know, if you're out at a hamburger. It's out there. CMO of the show, how to do it properly.
Yeah, I feel like
I feel like it's weird when parents, they don't do things that they would normally do because they're afraid that it's going to send the wrong message. But the fact is that it's if it's what they do and they do it responsibly, then...
That's right. Juliet, I have been following you since Juliet and Mike. That's when I first saw you.
Thank you for putting my name first, because it was actually Mike and Juliet, but I agree with you. It should have been Juliet and Mike.
How are you? My God, you were on Fox. I've been following you, and I didn't see you. And I pulled up Curtis to see, but I never got through. I said, I just want to see what Juliet's up to.
Aw, well, thank you.
Well, she's busy here, back-to-back, belly-to-belly. She's been with us 2 days in a row, and I have a feeling... She'll probably be back sometime next week.
I hope so.
Unless your calendar is so packed and jammed with Trendoids, Freakazoids, and Jet Setters that you're hooked up with.
Thanks, Mary.
Let's go to Craig in the Bronx. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet here at WABC. Craig?
Yes. Hi, Curtis and Juliet. A pleasure to talk to you. First time caller.
Hello.
I grew up in an Irish Catholic family. I'll be turning 70 shortly. And... It was actually a pleasure when my father had a few drinks to kind of like loosen up. Let me just put it this way. Typical Irish Catholic, 18 years with him, it was like day camp when I went to the military.
In what way?
Well, it was a lot easier. He was rather dominant. And, my mother, had a drinking problem. Then I went into the military, and like I said, we had drinks at 12 years old, you know, for, like, Thanksgiving and whatever. And when I went in the military, there was no such thing as a drinking problem. The only drinking problem you had back then...
Is if you didn't.
...was if you, you know, couldn't keep up. Seriously. I mean, it was a whole different world.
Well, it's not so much of a different world. I mean, you find that in, you know, I know a lot of my metal band musician guys say the same thing. At least it used to be this way, that, you know, you have to, like, power down. Like Pantera, I remember seeing the documentary, and they're like, if you weren't drinking, if you weren't getting completely blitzed, you kind of were, like, on the verge of being kicked out of the band.
Or you get ostracized in other ways. How many times I've been to Polish or Irish events? If you're not up at the bar, bellied up, knocking back Irish car bombs, Jameson or Polish or Russian Stoli vodka, they won't talk to you. It's almost like, you know, it's like the way...
they don't trust you.
The way our news guy here treats me, because he's such a Met fan, that he really hates, he loathes, he despises the Yankees like Mayor de Blasio does, Ken Duffy.
Go Houston.
You see?
Then go Dodgers.
See? You see? Ultra de tour.
Oh, yeah. Down the line.
But anyway, why don't you just stuff it and give us the news headlines and updates.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
77 WABC.
I bet this brings back lots of memories for you, Curtis Sliwa.
Oh, absolutely.
Former attendee of various gentlemen's clubs around the city.
No, actually, when I was first organizing the Los Angeles chapter of the Guardian Angels.
You went to the girls place?
Right on Sunset.
It's called girls, right?
Oh, yeah. I was invited in, you know, by the guys outside, the muscle heads, you know, the 400-pound muscle heads.
Did they recognize
security.
You?
Yeah, they recognized me. They said, you want to come in? They introduced me to some of the girls. I introduced myself. They seemed
sure
to know who
did.
I was. And I had a pleasurable...
Oh, okay.
It was an hour. Look, I didn't
Did you go into the champagne room or whatever that's
No, I did not get a Brumski. And I did not get a lap dance. A Brumski.
Brumski?
Yeah, do you know what a Brumski is?
Well, obviously, no, I don't, because I'm asking Brum.
As you know, the ladies who generally are pole dancers or
performers... Who are generally, you mean...
Yeah, generally. Not always. Are well endowed because they've had either artificial means of being well endowed.
Nothing wrong with that.
I don't know if it's styrofoam or whatever they put in there. But the point is a Brumski is when they take the mammary glands.
Oh, my God.
And actually, you put your face in the mammary glands and you go... That's a Brumski.
It's called something else. It's called...
What do you call it? What?
Motorboating.
Well, you could say it. It's only 7 words you can't really say on radio, or you'll get us all in trouble with the FCC.
I don't, just in case there are children.
It's a Brumski.
Motorboating. motorboating.
Okay, all right, whatever you said. I'm a little hard of hearing.
Okay, anyway.
But now I understand you brought to my attention that the art of pole dancing, that actually a court...
And it is an art,
well,
apparently.
A court case went to Albany on this very issue. One of the gentlemen's clubs said, oh, no, no, our gals who perform, they are actually artists.
Artists.
And they have to be taxed at a different rate than if they were just performers.
Well, I mean, have you seen the way some of these ladies, you know, contort
gyrate
themselves?
Sure,
and I mean, it looks like a some sort of modern art.
No doubt. But
of some sort.
You're now claiming it's going to be a potential Olympic sport?
Well, I'm not going to say, yes, potential. I don't think it's likely. But there is an arm of the Olympic world that looks at different sports out there, or what the players might say are sports, but others might say this is ridiculous and it's like a little kid's game or a bar game. But anyway, pole dancing is now being looked at as a potential addition to the Olympics, just as they are looking at, and they have looked at, things like dodgeball, foot golf, which I didn't Google, but I'm guessing that is foosball, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Or foot soccer, I don't know. Kettleball. I guess apparently now we could see various athletes on a pole at the Olympics.
And I understand five-card draw poker.
Poker, yes. Table soccer, that's what foosball, I think, is.
Right,
yeah,
so
they're being observed right now. They are being observed by actual officials.
Oh, officials of the corrupt International Olympic Committee.
Incredibly corrupt. So you know this is probably a guarantee.
Who are going to strip parlors all over the world to see if, in fact, it's athletic enough when a girl is doing the gyrations on the pole.
It can be, depending on the girl.
As to whether it can be considered an Olympic sport. Ladies and gentlemen, I open this up to all of you.
This is a dream come true for you.
Imagine if you are members of the corrupt International Organizing Committee for...
IEOC, is that what it is?
Right, the Future Summer Olympic Games.
EOIC.
Would you consider pole dancing to be a sport? 1-800-848-WABC, which you have medals?
Ladies, too. Ladies, too.
Well, of course, because they generally perform, although it's not limited to women, because you would have to open it up to men.
Well, no, not necessarily.
Sure.
No.
Why? You had Chippendales guys, right? You would have Chippendales guys who would be on the pole.
No, I don't know.
Magic Mike, right?
I don't know about this. But here's the thing. There are rules to even be considered. The sport has to be practiced in 75 countries and four continents for men. It's a different story, though, for women. Only 40 countries the sport has to be practiced in and three continents.
Well,
to be a women's...
We know there are strip clubs all over the world.
Well, exactly. So I think we're covered there. We're covered. But...
When you say we, why do you include me in on that?
Well... I don't.
You act as if
I have no,
you're already lobbying to get pole dancing as an Olympic sport.
Look, I mean, I don't frequent the strip clubs, but I do think that many of these ladies are very talented in their acrobatics, I guess you could say, their acrobatiques. I don't know. Look, stranger things have happened, Curtis.
Our number's 1-800-848-WABC. And what about for you card sharks out there, you degenerate gamblers? Would you want to see what we see on ESPN now when they go right to Vegas or some other casino locale in Macau and have, you know, like the million-dollar pots there? Would you want to see that become an Olympic sport, guys and gals playing poker?
To be a sport, don't you have to compete at it? I mean, are there – I don't know. Maybe a stripper can call. Are there stripper competitions, or is it just like whatever?
Well, yeah,
whatever strip club is.
You would have to qualify in order to get into the Olympic Games to represent your country in that sport.
And so, I wonder what the rules and regulations would be of that.
You'd have to give brumskis and lap dances to the judges, who would then elevate you to representing their country.
It's called motorboating.
Whatever.
That's what people.
1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Diane, who's calling from Long Branch. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Diane?
Diane.
Curtis, first of all, it is a motorboat.
Thank you.
Second of all, you're welcome. And second of all, if it becomes an Olympic sport, what we are going to see are 13, 14-year-old girls on a pole. Does anybody really want to see that?
I think they're already there in some places. I got to be honest with you. Sad
oh
as it is
God.
To say. No, I mean,
you're probably right.
You like been down to Alabama lately?
They are the true gymnasts. They're going to take over the sport. So you're not going to have, you know, the well-endowed girls that do it professionally now.
Or maybe
professional sports.
Maybe they will. Maybe these girls will actually give up the stripping. Because they are so
We know the Chinese
talented.
And the Romanians always lie about the ages of their gymnastic competitors. So what would stop them from lying about whoever is representing their country in pole dancing?
Correct. And what if we have a transgender?
Oh,
well,
I don't know where to begin there.
We'd have to have a special category, right?
There you go.
We call it the gender bender category.
Very strong
unitards.
Whether
you're a male she or a she male, you get to compete in that category.
I'm just throwing it out there because that's what's going to happen.
I like the way you think. That was taking it to a whole other level.
Thank you.
Impressive.
Now, who were the original pole dancers? Think of it. 1-800-848-WABC. I want you to think about
like burlesque?
No. Not Gypsy Rose Lee. That was before your time. She was a performer. She wasn't a stripper. She was a performer.
That's burlesque.
That was burlesque. Yes, that's right.
Totally different thing.
Down in your favorite city, on the block in downtown Baltimore, that's where she used to perform on a regular basis.
I don't know.
And how would I know that? None of your B.I.B. business. 1-800.
What years was she, was Gypsy Rose Lee? I mean, this was like...
50s. 50s and 60s.
Oh, well, you were... Yeah, you're about 30 then. Okay.
1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Jeff calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Jeff.
Hey.
Curtis, Juliet, hi guys. What's going on?
Hi.
My question is, they're going to have the pole dancing during the Olympics. Do the judges sit around the pole, and are they still going to tip the dancers? And if so, do they tip in the currency where the Olympics is being held at?
Oh, my God. It's like our previous caller, taking it to a whole other level.
Well,
I mean, really critically thinking about
Jeff,
this pole dancing in
Jeff,
the Olympics topic.
You would not want judges from either Venezuela or Rwanda because their currency is worthless.
They right, the girl, it in wheelbarrows.
Right. The girls would say, no. We don't want a Venezuelan or a Rwanda sticking that worthless currency in our G-strings.
And what kind of music would they be allowed to play? I mean, would they be allowed to play Motley Crue? Or would it have to be, you know, some sort of sweet Taylor Swift song? Would Motley Crue be allowed in certain places?
Yeah, I think it would. I think they've gotten a lot more hip, if you notice, in the gymnastics section and allowing music that's more current in the skating. They now have music that's a lot more current. It's not just Beethoven and Mozart Wagner.
When you get into the final round, let's say the final round, then what happens? Do they then graduate to a champagne-like room, you know?
Well, you have to influence the judges.
Is that what we will be dealing with?
Oh, of course. They're so corrupt in the Olympics. Why wouldn't it happen there?
Because when you're out there on, you know, at a strip club, you know, it's women that there could be one, you know, Raquel is on one stage and,
one of the judges would be Odell Beckham, who liked that strip joint up in the South Bronx where he claimed that he'd go there for the wings, the hot wings, not for the chicks. But for the hot wings, yeah, Odell Beckham, I'm sure you're there convalescing with your broken ankle right there. 1-800-848-WABC. It's Alex in Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here.
How you doing, guys? Curtis, I've been listening to you for many, many years. But anyway, all these Olympic committee types in every country, I'm sure, are very corrupt and on the take. And all these transactions probably take place in strip clubs. As they do in the States.
So you're saying that they would be likely to pass this to get to have this become a sport because it's basically part of their makeup anyway.
I don't think it's going to become a sport, but this way, if somebody sees them hanging out in a strip club, they can claim they're evaluating
evaluating performances.
Impressive calling. Impressive.
You know, do you hold cards up when the girls are on the poles? You know, yeah, I give her a 9 for that. I give her an 8. Hey, are you double jointed? If you're double jointed, I'll give you a 10. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to John in Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Juliet Huddy here on WABC. Johnny?
Hey, Curtis, Julian, I remember waking up at 5 in the morning. You were the bright, perky newscaster that used to wake up everybody.
Thank God for coffee.
All right, well, listen, I think if they make this pole dancing a sport, I think we should have the artists as strippers claim themselves as athletes so they can get taxed in every state, taxed in every city for whatever they're doing for their performances. Then these strip clubs should have insurance for the athletes, pensions for the athletes. I think that'd be a great idea because these strip clubs make a lot of money, and I don't see where the money's going to the girls. They end up paying the girls paying the clubs. This way, at least the clubs will have to have a pension, insurance, and everything because they're athletes now. They're not artists.
Well, the only difference is, John, is you realize the girls don't report most of their money. It's cash. It's cash from
an hourly salary, and maybe this way you can set up good teams, and maybe the best pole dancer will win.
Yeah, maybe we can start it in high school. We have the JV pole dancing.
So it's
team
on ESPN,
and,
like the cheerleaders competition, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we got a whole thing happening here.
You are freaking out of your mind. You know, this International Olympic Committee, so corrupt, actually took away hardball and softball as an Olympic sport. It's a slap in the face to us. Remember that? They did that for a period of time.
Strippers unite.
Strippers unite.
Gold medals on the way.
They're going to be an Olympic sport. Stripping. Brum skis. What did you call the other thing?
Motorboats.
Yeah, motorboats. Lap dances. Are you freaking out of your mind, Julianne?
Very much so.
Of course you are.